We've got a special guest in the studio, one of our journalists here at 2SER, Tina Quinn, joins us to talk about the US inauguration. She's tracked down a fantastic pundit, Kim Hoggard, who worked on both the Reagan and Bush administrations. And they're going to be chatting about the very historic events taking place over in the United States with the swearing-in of Joe Biden as the 46th president and of Kamala Harris as the vice president. Tina and Kim, but Tina, I'll let you take it away.
Good morning. Good morning, Steph. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. Well, as you mentioned, right now we're joined on the line by former US government official and friend of the Daily, Kim Hoggard, who served as Assistant Press Secretary to President Ronald Reagan and worked for the US Secretary of State, James A. Baker III, during George H. Bush's administration. Kim Hoggard, welcome back to the Daily.
Thanks for having me again, Tina. It's a pleasure.
We last spoke just as the Georgia Senate race polls were closing for the day. The fortnight that followed has been extraordinary, really. The Democrats winning both seats in that Senate runoff, which was followed hours later by a deadly storming of the U.S. Capitol, which was an extraordinary assault on U.S. democracy. Trump was then impeached, the first time in history that a U.S. president has been impeached twice. And then in the last number of hours, after what has seemed a two-month eternity of transition, the United States has a new president and vice president. As an American, how are you feeling today?
Wow.
It's been an extraordinary fortnight, has it not?
It's been an extraordinary 4 years. The last year particularly has been very, very difficult for America. So I believe I'm probably feeling like a lot of Americans would be, a sense of relief, a lot of exhaustion. Mm-hmm. Over what the country has been through, but with a modicum of hope for the future. As you said, the last year in particular, as well as particularly the last few weeks, but the last year has been very difficult for America, with 400,000 who have died from coronavirus, a president who admitted early on that he was playing it down, the severity of the infection, and then a summer of violent protests brought on by shocking images of police shootings and killings of Black Americans, and months and months of protests following that. And we've ended during a very contentious election year, in which we didn't find out the result of that for some weeks, and a president who never conceded the election and tried to overturn the election from the very beginning really put the country through a terrible time. And of course, we saw how that culminated in the insurrection at the Capitol, which was an image produced images which I never thought I would see. And we've ended up at an inauguration day with a fortified city with 25,000 National Guard, and President Biden unable to celebrate in the manner that we're used to or traditionally celebrate in the United States, with parades and inaugural balls and just a general feeling of you know, celebrating the American tradition of a peaceful transfer of power. So I have a sense of relief, but it's also balanced by this trauma that Americans have been experiencing, particularly over the last few weeks.
In his inaugural address to the nation, President Biden called for unity and a return to the ordinary discord of democracy amongst a nation that has been, as you've mentioned, ravaged by the pandemic and is still extremely divided. Do you think the United States can really push a reset button, and should it want to? I mean, things weren't exactly perfect, which is probably what led to the election of a populist fascist in the first place.
So it's a good question. Certainly today feels like a pushing of the reset button. I've worked through two transitions, presidential transitions, mm-hmm. myself. They're very truncated periods in which you have an awful lot to accomplish, to form government and to hit the ground running. this administration, this new administration, has had so many obstacles thrown up in its way to get that process underway. So it's amazing to me that they've achieved as much as they have achieved in terms of appointments, cabinet choices, and policy and legislative packages already to send to Congress. I'd also like to just go back and note that he started out the inauguration process the day before with acknowledging 400,000 lives lost to COVID, which has not really been done, or an opportunity for the nation to grieve together at all. This is the first, that was the first time that happened. I thought that was a poignant start prior to his swearing in, to recognize that. And then to go from his swearing in straight to Arlington Cemetery to honor America's war dead, along with three former presidents from both sides of the aisle, was an important symbol of unity, as you described, how he described what he talked about in his speech. But to go then straight to the White House with an Oval Office that's completely redesigned in terms of its fittings, with new portraits.
Has it been fumigated?
New symbols, completely cleaned. But I would encourage everyone to look at the new symbolism in the White House with the in the Oval Office with the different portraits and what that means to Biden. But now he's right away setting off a flurry of executive orders that will really reverse, or even in some cases erase, some of the Trump legacy from day one, and that's a very ambitious agenda.
Well, I did want to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. So he's already cancelled the Keystone Pipeline. He's ordered federal agencies to begin the process of reinstating environmental regulations, which Trump had reversed. Mm-hmm. And most pressingly, he's recommitted the US to the Paris Climate Agreement. These are all fantastic moves, but alone, you know, they won't lower the US's emissions. Do you think Biden will properly back these moves up with aggressive domestic climate policies?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In addition to those things, he's ordered a mask mandate on all federal properties and in federal agencies and within the White House. So even while he was signing all of these executive orders, he was wearing a mask in the Oval Office, as was everyone else. But yes, on climate, you know, he has said from day one he would rejoin the Paris Accord. Mm-hmm. He's doing that. He's established a couple of extra White House offices. You know, in the White House and the way it operates, it has several policy steering bodies. The traditional ones, the Domestic Policy Council, the Economic Policy Council, the National Security Council. But he's added two more. One is the Coronavirus Task Force, but the other is a climate policy office, council. And every one of these policy steering bodies will be taking into consideration climate issues, as well as racial inequity issues. So he's really taking a whole of government approach to all of these major crises that America faces, along with climate change and the shattered economy and the pandemic and racial injustice. And I would add to that a nation torn apart that he has to try to heal. And that's probably just as big a challenge for him as these other issues.
And it's so exciting to see, obviously, his cabinet is, I think, the most diverse cabinet within a White House administration in history. It's fantastic to see. It actually gives you real hope that change is seriously on the agenda.
And we have our first female vice president in American history in Kamala Harris.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will get to her in a moment. I also just wanted to quickly ask, from a foreign policy perspective, do you think, I mean, you obviously served in the State Department under James A. Baker III. Do you think President Biden will be more visible than many are expecting, or do you think he'll be too preoccupied by the largesse of the task at hand in sorting out issues on the home front? He has an out-of-control pandemic to contend with, a massive economic recovery effort, and deeply divided racial tensions. What do you think his presence will be on the international stage?
I think we'll see a very visible president. He reminds me a lot of George H.W. Bush, who I worked for, as you mentioned, in terms of his experience, experience on the global stage over the course of many decades, the number of world leaders that he is familiar with. He's familiar with all of the issues that affect various allies and enemies. So I definitely see him taking a very forward approach. He will return the United States to a more multilateral approach. He'll move away from the Trump administration's isolationist America First policies that did damage to alliances and made things more difficult for the Biden administration coming in to deal with countries like China and trade issues. So he'll definitely have a more global outlook. He'll have respect for multilateral institutions and agreements, as well as respect for allies. And importantly, we'll see a return to truth and transparency in not just domestic policy, but also foreign policy. You know, he believes in multinationalism. He's got a lot of challenges on his plate, but he has an exceptionally qualified team around him, particularly in the national security and foreign policy arena. And I think, you know, it's an exciting time to see the effort to revive U.S. alliances in particular and try to work together to promote national security interests for the United States and its as well as its alliances.
I want to talk a little about Joe Biden's newly sworn-in Vice President Kamala Harris. She's the 49th VP of the United States, the first person of South Asian descent to hold the nation's second highest office, and the very first female to be elected to the role, as you mentioned, making her the highest-ranking female in U.S. history. Do you think she will serve more as a governing partner to the president? It is notable that to date she's yet to be assigned a specific issue portfolio.
I think given that Joe Biden was a vice president for 8 years, I think he knows exactly how he wants, right, where he wants his vice president to be. And it'll be similar to what he told President Obama, that he wanted to be the first person in the room and the last person in the room on any major discussion. He's already indicated that to Kamala Harris, that he will be seeking her guidance and input on all of these major issues, that she will be in the room. And I could certainly see him putting her in charge of some issues in which she has particular expertise as a former attorney general of California around criminal justice issues, which is a high on his priorities. But I think she's going to be as much an influence of a vice president as Joe Biden was with President Obama.
And look, just lastly to finish off, I'm going to turn briefly now to number 45. Donald Trump departed the White House for the last time only hours ago, becoming the first incumbent seeking re-election to see his party lose the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives since, I think it was Herbert Hoover in 1932. Any comment on his final address to the nation and his supporters?
Well, I think it's very unfortunate that President Trump did not take the opportunity after the election results were known to concede and to congratulate his successors. And then he could have spent the last couple of months talking about the accomplishments of his administration. Mm-hmm. Instead, he wasted that time. And not only did he waste that time, he fomented anger and division in the country that led to the final assault. So as you mentioned in the beginning, he's a twice impeached president who will face trial in the Senate now for conviction. That remains to be seen whether that would the conviction will happen, but he'll also face state charges as a citizen going forward. I think it's really unfortunate that he ended his presidency this way. It's no surprise. He talked about what he'll be seen again in the future. And I think that's going to be a very difficult thing for the Republican Party going forward. They're split between traditionalists and Trump supporters. He can do further damage to the Republican Party. And I think it'll be very dismal prospects for Republicans to win another election at a presidential level, as long as he has that input. So he's left a wake of destruction behind him. He tried to be somewhat magnanimous in his final address to a small crowd at Andrews Air Force Base. But by and large, he leaves a disgraced president with a legacy that is very quickly being erased by the Biden administration.
Well, Kim Hoggard, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning on The Daily on what is a very historic day.
It is. Thanks for having me, Tina.
Pleasure. That was Kim Hoggard, who served as the Assistant Press Secretary to President Ronald Reagan and worked for the US Secretary of State, James A. Baker III, during George H.W. Bush's administration in the late 80s and early 90s. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you so much, Tina. Fantastic stuff. What a historic moment. And that interview really just brought a lot of those things, that are going on over there and what it means home for me this morning. Great stuff.
Mm. It's great to talk about the actual, to talk on a policy level. I feel like we've kind of been very caught up in the politics of politics, not the policy of politics, the last number of years.
Haven't been talking about much policy in the last 4 years, definitely when it comes to US politics.